What I'm going to talk about is joint work with Jack Fernley and Hershey Kislevsky, also at Concordia University. Okay, so let's start with an object that was defined several times. Let's take an elliptic curve E over Q, and let's look at its L function, L E of, which you can write, of course, as a sum or an Euler product. So it's the sum that P does not divide N E 1 minus A P, P to the S plus P, P to the 2S. Minus 1, and you have to define at the bad prime, you have to define the Euler factor a bit differently. Okay, so this converges to, because you know the bound on the AP, it converges to real part of S bigger than 3 half, but also it has analytic continuation, of course, it is now well known. And functional equation, so thanks to the work, of course, of Wiles, Taylor Wiles, and Breuil, Conrad, Diamond, Taylor. And the functional equation, let me write it. So it has the conductor of the curve, some gamma function, and the L function, and there's, so 2 minus S. So I didn't normalize, so the center of symmetry is real part of S equals to 1. So the sign of the functional equation, it can be only plus or minus 1. That's minus the sign of the Fricke involution. So what does the L series tell us? Well, of course, there's a, maybe I write it here, famous conjecture of Birch. Sorry, I have to put the blackboard here. And Swin and Turn. Which told us that the order at S equal 1 of LE, S is the rank of E, okay. Which I didn't define, but you can write E as a free part and a torsion part. In the free part, the order of the L function at S equal 1 is the rank. Okay, so why I'm saying that? Because vanishing of LE of S indicates, you know, points on E of Q. So now let's take chi, a primitive Dirichlet character, so I'm going to call the conductor F. And of course, you need F. I'm going to twist by the character, so I need F to be coprime to the conductor of the curve. Then you can define the twisted L series, LES chi. And it's going to be simply twist by chi. And of course, I can write that as an Euler product, because this is a completely multiplicative function. So this also has, of course, it converges absolutely in the same region. It also has functional equation and analytic continuation. So if I write the functional equation, so enters in the picture now, of course, is the conductor of the character. And there's, let me denote the sign of, I mean, the sign, the root number by omega E of chi. So 2 minus F chi bar. So now the complex conjugate of the character. And the root number is which has absolute value 1, but there's a question of the sign of the Gauss sum. This is certainly not plus or minus 1. This can go now all over the place. So this is the L function, and I'm going to talk about vanishing of this L function. This is the object we want to look at, those twisted L function. So can I make the same analogy as the conjecture of Birch and Swinton Dyer? This is also related to the existence of point on E, but not over Q. If you take K over Q, and you let a Galois extension, with Galois group G, then it follows from LE. If I look at L, maybe I write it differently, LE over K F. So that's the L series of E seen as a curve over K. It's a curve over Q. It can also be seen as a curve over K. And this is going to be a product over all the character of the Galois group LE. This, in a way, has nothing to do with the elliptic curve. It has to do with the field k. That's a decondition associated to the field k. So vanishing of those will imply existence of point of E over k. And this is what we want to look at. What is the vanishing of those twisted L series? I'm sorry? Yeah. It's a, yeah, of course. If not, it doesn't make any sense. It's a Deegan. Sorry. I didn't see it. So you have to distinguish two cases, if you know about that. The first case being is that if chi is a quadratic character, of discriminant, or discriminant or conductor, let me use the discriminant because it's more standard. So let me write that. So I'll write that chi d. So we'll know it's quadratic. If not, I don't indicate the conductor. So then two things happen, of course. What happens is if you look at the functional equation, that's a quadratic character, that's a real character. So the functional equation, which is here, I'm sorry, relates LE S chi and LE 2 minus S chi, you know, complex conjugation is the same. So what you have is that the functional equation, if you take it at the central point, relates LE S chi D to itself, which is going to give a vanishing. And also you have the second thing that was mentioned, for example, yesterday, that, you know, in fact, if you look at this functional equation, LE S chi D is, in fact, the functional equation of a curve over Q. So where ED is, of course, the twisted curve, D. So that's easy to see. Counting point on the twisted curve, of course, has to do with is D a square about P or not when you look over a finite field. So those two things happen. So because the functional equation relates LEF chi D to itself, you have that when the sign of the functional equation is minus 1, you get, and the sign of the functional equation in that case is, here it's a quadratic character, so we know the sign of the Gauss sum, so the sign of the functional equation is just that. So when this is equal to minus 1, this of course implies that LE 1 chi, sorry, is equal to 0. Yeah, and I think that's what you said, yeah. We're going to look at vanishing everywhere, but I'm looking at vanishing at the central critical point. Okay, so, and this will happen, well, if you look at that, that's a quadratic character, it would happen half of the time, you know, in asymptotically. So if I let n of x, so just to, I just want to state the result in conjecture in that case, so let me call n of x just to be the number of discriminant. So those are, so let me save a bit of writing, those are discriminant of quadratic character, which is a square-free number. So this is a constant times ig. The constant happened to be 1 over zeta 2. You're counting square-free numbers. So, and now let me define nr of x. It's going to be the number of such discriminants such that LE 1 chi d is equal. So the order of vanishing. So now I have to put back an s. The order of vanishing at s equal 1. Of this thing is equal to exactly to R. Okay, because of this observation, then half of the time you're going to have, let me try to be better at blackboard management. So half of the time, if you look at, for example, N1 of X, well, it's going to be at least 1/2 of X, because half of the time it has to vanish, I mean, to order 1. It could vanish to biggest order, but there's a conjecture. Which tells that it would have a tendency to vanish with the minimal possible vanishing. So N1 of x should be half of the discriminant, and 0 of x should also be half of the discriminant. So if we count it well, of course, there's not much left for, so this should be small O of x. So, and so what's the idea behind this conjecture? You could say, well, vanishing indicates existence of points on curve. And, you know, getting points on curve is not an event that, you know, happens often. It's going to be one rational. Or you could say, even if at some point maybe this conjecture was a bit controversial because they, you know, you could do numerical evidence, which it would seem that there's a lot of vanishing at the beginning. Now there's another reason to believe that, and this is the work of Katz and Sarnak. So this is also implied by a conjecture of Katz and Sarnak, which is I'm saying that, you know, I rank would happen with zero density. Okay? And this is what I want to talk about. So maybe I can mention lower bounds on that. Okay, I'll come back to the work of Katz and Sarnak because I'm going to use that to get to estimate for vanishing in another family. So if you look at lower bounds of that, this is the work of Gouveia, Mazur, and let me put a couple of names, Stewart Top, and also Ruben Silverberg. So you can get a result that tells you that like the set of curve where so it vanishes with density zero, but it can happen infinitely often. So the set of curves where the rank is bigger or equal than 2, it's going to be, bigger than x to the 1/2. So this is Gouveia-Mazur with a, not exactly, I think Gouveia-Mazur had the log. It was not as good. So this is a Gouveia-Mazur as improved by Stewart and Top. And now Rubin and Silverberg have also estimate on the family of, so I'm using this, their notation, by the way. This means, you know, the number, when I did my definition, I said exactly equal to R, but it's kind of clear that I mean bigger or equal than 3. So this would be, you know, x to the 1/4, and this is x to the 1/6. So all that is under the parity conjecture. So what's the truth? And this is back to what I'm talking about. So you have reasons to believe that, and one of the reasons, which is now the link between random matrices and vanishing of L function, will lead you to believe that, okay, not only this is true, but you can make more precise computation. And there's a conjecture for that case, due to Conry, Keating, So where I'm going to say that, NE. So in this section, in 2 minutes, I'm going to quit quadratic twist, but now all the twists are quadratic. So here I'm going to write N bigger or equal than 2 even X. That's a very good notation because you can change it to put whatever you want. So I mean the set of quadratic twists of E, so the curve is fixed, where the rank is bigger or equal to 2 and it's also even. Okay, so the sign of the functional equation is plus 1. So this is going to be asymptotic to some constant, so maybe I call it BE, I think they call it x to the 3/4 and some log. So the constant depends on the curve and the power of the log depends on the curve. And we're going to see a bit when we do this. I'm not going to redo that proof. I'm not going to explain where this conjecture comes from. I'm going to explain a similar conjecture for another family and we're going to see where the log comes from and why we don't want to, you know, the power of the log can depend on the curve. Some discretization of the curve. So this is for the case of quadratic twist, so quadratic character. And now the second case, and so now I'm not going to talk about quadratic character anymore. I'm going to talk about higher order characters. And in fact, so I could talk about that in general, but I'm going to talk about cubic characters. And, you know, some of that could be said, you know, could be done for other families of characters, but I'm going to say that about cubic character, where you have, so n of x from now is going to be the number of chi, which are cubic characters. So Dirichlet primitive cubic characters, such that their conductor is smaller than x. That's also a constant times x. I'm not going to write a constant. It can also be written as an Euler product. It's about 0.15. And any of x is going to be the number of such character, so chi cubic character of conductor smaller than x, such that LE1 chi is equal to 0. Okay. So why is it different? Well, first of all here, if you look at the functional equation, which is someplace on the board, if you look at the central critical point, it relates LE1 chi to LE1 chi bar. So and it does tell you something, of course, about, you know, it relates, And LE1 chi bar is, of course, a complex conjugate. The curve is defined over Q, so you conjugate the whole function. It does tell you something about the arithmetic, about the rationality of the central L value, and we're going to use that, but it doesn't tell you anything about the vanishing. Okay? So there's no reason to predict that this is going to vanish for infinitely many twists. So maybe a guess would be that, you know, conjecture NEX. So you can say that, well, why would you say this conjecture? You can say, well, there is no reason for it to vanish. And you can also attribute that to Kaczmarek because that's, again, a particular case of their work. They have a conjecture which is like the density conjecture. And in particular, this would follow from that. Okay, so you know, if I'm still continuing to look at the case of cubic twist in analogy with the case of quadratic character, well, there's a big difference. The functional equation relates the central critical value to its complex conjugate. There's also the fact that, you know, the twisted L function is not the L function of a curve defined over Q, but it's related to points on the curve over other fields. And now we can say maybe what could we say in terms of lower bound? Well, you can achieve so it's small O of X, so that's the upper bound. Now on the other direction, so those are results of, you can say maybe if LE1 chi, so if, so let me write that. That's a bad start. If LE1 chi 1 vanishes for one character, then it vanishes for infinitely many. So which is a Fernley-Kieselowski that I mentioned before. I'm going to use initial and Kawada independently. And you can also say, so what about now a lower bound? Well, if E has, which is also due, a second result also due to Fernley-Kieselowski, so if E has rational tree torsion, over rational means, of course, over Q. In that case, the curve is over Q. Rational tree torsion, then NEX, it's going to be, so if it has rational tree torsion, so you can build, you know, that number of twists which have points, so which will tell you the vanishing of the L function. So NEX is at least X to the 1/2, so by analogy with those results. So what can we say? So now that's the analogy to those results, and now what I would like to explain is, how can you use the theory of random matrix to get something like that? And what does it mean? What is the link with the random matrices in the L function? And which part is random matrices and which part is what is called arithmetic? So that's it for the introduction. So I have to talk a bit about random matrices. So let me try to do my best to just to give justice to their ideas and explain where it's coming from. It's going to be, of course, just a short introduction. So maybe, people always say the same thing, but I guess there's no choice. You have to start with one name, Montgomery, okay, which looks at, so I want to say there's a, you know, if I look at the zeros of L functions, so the first L function is the Riemann zeta function, on the critical line, well, there's going to be a link with certain groups of matrices called random matrices. So the link is between the measures are going to be, in some limiting sense, the same. So random matrices are the group of matrices under the Haar measure. So if I look at the zeta, the zeta function on 1/2 plus IT, so Montgomery computed the correlation. So he computed some results related to the correlation. So it gives me some zeros, which I'm going to call gamma 1 smaller than gamma 2 smaller than gamma 3, etc. So gamma 1 is about 14. So, in fact, you have to normalize them, because you know the number of 0 up to t is about t log t. So you have to do some normalization, and now you're going to end up with some normalized 0, so that the mean spacing between them is normalized. So if you look at the correlation in here, the pair correlation, okay? So Montgomery obtained some result that I'm not going to write about pair correlation, which seems to indicate that there is a link between those zeros. Okay, so statistics, maybe I write whatever that means, statistics about pair correlation indicate a link between, so the zeros and eigenvalues of unitary matrices. But this is a proven theorem which, under a certain assumption, at the limit, the measure which will appear is exactly the measure which measures the correlation of the eigenvalues of matrices in UN. So that's kind of a striking thing. So you're saying, well, there, this thing that happened, is there other links? So the two objects that, so if you look at, maybe I'll make a little picture. I'm sorry, this is really a crash introduction. So, and here you have, so if you take what I'm going to call UN, UN is just a group of n by n unitary matrices. That's not a mysterious object. So if you take an n by n unitary matrices, it has n eigenvalues, which, you know, the matrix is unitary, so they're on the unit circle. Okay. Of course, some normalization has to be involved, because here, of course, there are infinitely many zeros. The distance between the zero is not the same, etc. But under that normalization, it seems that what measures pair correlation is the same measure in both cases. Okay, so I will denote my eigenvalue as lambda 1. Lambda I is going to be e to the I theta I. And what's the first one is theta 1, theta 2, theta 3. So if you have to put an order to compare them, that's my first one. Well, it could be here or it could be up here, but that's my first one. So that's the first result, and maybe if, so the result of Montgomery is a theoretical result, some theorem about pair correlation where the same measure appear, but you can look at other statistics. So now you're looking at pair correlation, but there's other statistics on the zero that you can look at. So another evidence for that, one of the, is maybe the work of Adlisko. Where he didn't look at pair correlation, he looked at the successive spacing. So if you take two successive zero, they're ordered, of course, by increasing imaginary part. What's the, you know, if you look at the successive spacing, well, this is something you can compute numerically. And on that side, you know everything. You can go and compute the measure for the successive spacing. And there was, you know, so maybe the work of Montgomery was about pair correlation, which seems to indicate the first evidence. The work of Adlisko in the 80s, which was, you know, compute in the massive amount of zero of the zeta function and look at their successive spacing and compare it to what would be predicted about the successive spacing of eigenvalue of random matrices. So that's the statistic that you use. Okay. And I'm going to use also, so another thing that we're going to do to compare those would be something that they can lack is low-lying zeros. But if I look at low-lying zeros already, you're going to tell me, well, the Riemann zeta function, low-lying zero, well, the first zero is 14 point dot, 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 dot. We know exactly what it is. So if you want to look at low-lying zero, you have to look in a family. And maybe that's the new point of view of, you know, Katz and Sarnak. So this massive work that was done about 5 or 6 years ago, which what they did is that, okay, there seemed to be a link between the zeros of zeta function, and I'm skipping a lot of history. It's not only the zeros of zeta function, it was generalized to L function in general, you know, about the most general that you can think, you know, automorphic L function, and not only paracorrelation, but all correlation. This is a Rudnick-Sarnak. But now, if you look at that, what the work of Katzarnack is that they prove, and, you know, I cannot, you know, if I wanted to go into that, it would take me a couple of hours. Just let me do a sentence. They prove that the link, the connection between zeros of L functions and random matrices. So this is very vague. So over a keyword is missing over a function field. So, and in doing that, you know, maybe changing a bit the point of view, they also introduce, and this is what I'm going to use, introduced the concept of family of L functions. Which is a really a leap. It's a different point of view that you're not going to look only at the... So you could fix one L function and look at the zeros, but what you can also do is that take a family of L function and look how the statistic of the zero varies in the family, for example, the low-lying zero. Cool? And of course, if you know things about the low-lying zero, well, you will know things about vanishing. Okay? Because if there's vanishing, well, the low... Well, when you be the first zero, well, the first zero, of course, is going to be here. So this is the first time the function vanishes. So if there's vanishing, the first time the function vanishes is going to be here. Okay. So, and what family of L function? I want to say that to say, because I said before, well, those two conjectures that we believe are due to the work of Katzarnack, it's looking at precise family. So, for example, one family you could look at would be LE1 chi d. So this would be chi d, our quadratic character. So maybe I write F. And also, you're going to take, so you're going to, by introducing other condition in your family, here I'm going to say that the sign of the functional equation is going to be plus 1. Okay. So that would be a family. Okay. So what this family will give you, well, this is the family that was used to get the conjecture that I mentioned before, the conjecture of Conway, Keating, Rubinstein, and Snaith. And another, so there are a lot of other families. So the other one, LE F chi, such that chi is a cubic character, okay, that's going to be the family that I'm going to use. Okay, I could write other one. I could write, for example, LSF, where F will be a cusp form of weight 2 and level Q. So that would also be a family. And of course, you're looking at the limit when in all that, so I'm going to look at the limit when I take all characters in L when Q goes to infinity. So this is what I want to do. So I want to use their result for those family to look at my problem in this new light. So I have, this was kind of a one big leap towards, you know, an ideal to study this problem. Now I have to take another one, which is, I don't want to look at the low-lying zero. Actually, to get result on the vanishing, you have to look at the value distribution. Okay, so based on that, that's the work of Keating and Snaith. So my family for now on, so because of my application, that's going to be what I call my family. And it's going to be that the value distribution in my family, so that's the value distribution of LE1 chi. After all, I can look, do they vanish or not? Or I can say, well, they don't vanish, but they still have a value. And in fact, I have to take that in absolute value, but maybe I'll write it later. It's going to be related to the value distribution of PA of 1. So what is P of 1? Whoops. Chalk it down. So P of lambda is the characteristic polynomial of A, which belongs in my group of matrices. Okay. So right now, this is what I'm doing. I'm placing me in the context that I'm using this connection. So I want to know things on this side, so I look on that side. And of course, at various points, I will have, in a way, to match the statistics, to know things about the arithmetic here, to refine my model and to get a precise conjecture. So if I look, for example, so you want to know about vanishing. So let me start looking at the moments. I will go to the vanishing through the moments. So what are the moments in my family? I'm going to call it M-E, K-S, maybe. So I should call it, in fact, 2K. But later, 2K can be any value. So those are the moments in my family, which means what? I do the sum for all conductors smaller than X. So for all characters of conductors smaller than X is what it means. And I look at the 2K moment. Well, according to the expert, there's no hope to computing that even for K is equal to 1. Of course, if I knew something about that, I would knew something about vanishing. You know, because, for example, you know, if I knew that this is the asymptotic, I just need any lower bound to conclude that there's infinitely no vanishing. And the more precise result that you know about, you know, the first moment, the second moment, you can put them together and get, you know, much more precise lower bound about vanishing. But this is a very difficult question, even for the first one, which is K is equal to 1. So what I'm going to do, I'm going to say, well, maybe I look at the moments which would be equivalent under, so I can look at 2K. So I'm using this notation where, I'm sorry, this is N. So E is to indicate that's my elliptic curve. U is to indicate that's on the random matrix size. That's a unitary group. Well, 2K is the same moment. And N is, well, I have this parameter X, which is the size of my family. I take conductor up to X. And here is the size of my matrix group. Okay, N by N, but this N will go to infinity. So this is simply the integral of, so the value PA at the point 1 to the 2K. So I'm integrating over un, and the measure is the R measure, dRa, if you want. Okay, so of course this can now be computed as opposed to that. So, and this is a theorem of Keating and Snaith. Which tells you that if I compute mu. So maybe I'll put that in two parts because I want first any moment and then the integral moment. So this can be computed for any s. So 2k doesn't have to be an even integer. It can be any s. And this is going to be just a product of gamma function. So I'm going to get gamma of j plus s. Okay, this can be computed, and now this is my B. I'll have to put on the other board. I don't have enough space. So B would be that mu of 2kn. Well, this is going to be is a polynomial of degree k square in n with leading coefficient so leading coefficient that provided that. So this is something that looks very much like what I wrote, provided I can. So for k is equal to 2, it should give a 24, 0, 24, or k is equal to 4, sorry, so you can check that. But this is what it gives. Okay, so they can compute that. You can compute it for any s, and you can compute it for when you put an integer, you get a simpler result, and you get that. So then if you look at that, so what's the, and it's always going to be like that. If I'm saying something is true for random matrices, well, this is a theorem, but now if I'm using, every time, of course, I'm using that arrow, you know, it becomes a conjecture, but I have to make sure every time I match the statistic and I use this arrow in the best possible way to be sure that I get what the model is saying. So the conjecture that I get by taking those in my family would be, of course, that MA of, so if I first look at S, so maybe I'll do A and B like in their theorem, my moments, the F moment up to X, well, this is going to be, and this is always when X goes to infinity. Okay? This is an asymptotic when X goes to infinity. It's going to be some arithmetical factor, mu Sn. Well, of course, then it looks a bit strange because I have X and I have N. So to match my statistics, I have to do this thing that we said at the beginning. We know how many zeros we have up to a certain height, and here we know how many zeros we have between 0 and 2 pi, so we just have to match that, so n will be 2 log x. And it goes to infinity. Okay, so this is certainly something I can use, provided, you know, you notice there's this thing. So this is also one of the standard thing which is done if you work that way, that there, of course, there are some moments that can be computed. This one cannot be computed, but there are some moments that can be computed, and you will notice that if you compute them from the random matrix side, you get something which is, you know, very similar. You get a striking analogy, but then there's something which is called the arithmetical factor, which you never get in that way. So you just put it back, okay? So that's my arithmetical factor, and if I want to use that model, I would have to compute it. This has nothing to do with random matrices. This has to do with my curve and my family. And the second result that I'm going to use is that MA of 2kx. So what's going to be that? It's going to be AE of k. Okay. Why do I put S over 2? It's just a question of notation. Okay. Because the 2kth moment gives to the k square. So that's just a dk log x to the So now, of course, this is a precise conjecture. So one thing you could do, of course, is check that. Take a computer, and after all, you can compute that. And here you can compute that, provided that you can compute that. So you can compute the arithmetical factor. You don't even need to use something like the approximate functional equation. What you do is just do it in a naive way. Try to compute the moment, neglect all error term, and every time you have something which, you know, you'll get functions which do not converge for all f, but then you remove the pole and you make something which converges for all f, and this is what should be your arithmetical factor. Okay? So you can compute that. So one can compute for our family. So every time you have a new family, you have to make this computation of the arithmetical factor. And I'm not going to go into that. There's a really not time to go into that. So AE of K. So what is going to be AE of K? Well, it's going to be a product. I'm going to write it as an Euler product. This is how you get it. 1 minus 1 over p to the k square. This is, of course, the same zeta function that appears here. So this is related that you get this log x to the k square. And here that your function, to kill its pole, you have to put the zero of this exact order. And some Euler factor ep. So maybe I write what EP is. It's going to be a nasty formula, but it's not so long. So it's going to be a summation. So this is just an exercise in Euler factoring multiplicative function. So I need 2k, I'm sorry, because I'm computing the 2kth moment. So, and here you have the summation of the EI for I is equal 1 to k. It's going to be equal to the summation of the EI. Okay, like that. So it's going to be congruent mod 3. This comes from the fact that when you take a cubic character, a sum over cubic character, and you evaluate it as a cube, you know exactly what it's going to come. So this is the condition that your power of p is exactly a cube. And here you're going to have AP1, APE2, APE2k divided by p to the sum of the EI. So your factor, so if you think about it and you look, well, if you didn't have that, of course, this would get a pole, but by doing that, you kill it. And this is, you know, this is in fact for p congruent to 2 mod 3. Okay. For p congruent to 1 mod 3, you would get a slightly different formula. And of course, the formula depends on the fact that k is an integer, the way it's written. You know, if k was 1/2, it would make a, I mean, 1/2, yes, but if k was a, not an integer, just a complex number, it would make no sense. But, you know, there's a, you know, you can write the Euler factor associated, you know, the AP are not completely multiplicative, but there's a factor of degree 2. So by using that, you can get a formula which is valid for all s. So the fact that k is an integer is irrelevant. So this is that, and I didn't bring the slide, but, you know, if I show you the slide, I will tell you, well, you put this conjecture on the computer, and you get a very good agreement. You can look at the paper that's on the web. So this is what you do. So you want to know if you believe that model, because you're going to make conjecture with that. So that's the first step. Okay, so now you have, you know, everything explicitly here, and you know it for any k. And you can compute the 1/2 moment, the 1/4 moment, any. It doesn't depend on the fact that k is an even integer. So you can compute that and check. And of course, this is going to be the same for the same k. This does not depend on the curve, but this does. Okay, and you get a very good agreement on that. The only thing you can do is check it experimentally because you cannot compute the moment. Okay, so that's for that. And now I'm going to use that finally to get to where I wanted to go in the last 15 minutes or so that I have. Maybe I should say also it's a to give justice to people who do that, there's some very amazing things that happened that this was done, of course, when Keating and Snape did that, they used exactly the same group, the unitary group, because they were looking at the Riemann zeta function. And of course, here you can compute the first two moments, and there's a general conjecture to what the moment should be, and this, if you know the subject, this factor was always very mysterious, okay? But you can, of course, you know, make a conjecture based on the fact that you try to do it, and then you make some assumption of what should be the main term, what should be the error term. This is, of course, not obvious, but this was always very mysterious. And if you, the formula that I have, it's not something you would guess if you knew the first one or two, you know? And this was obtained from the random matrix theory, and it fitted, I want to say it fitted the null result, but it also fitted the known result that you know for k is equal 1 or 2, but it also fitted conjecture which we made from the number theory. Okay. So this kind of a mysterious factor seems to have been cleared out by the random matrix theory. So this is a very nice thing. And now let me apply that to look at vanishing. Okay. And at some point, I have to input something from my family. Now this is, you know, there's a lot of family that would fall into that model. I have to tell the model I'm looking at the family of cubic twists. So if you know the moment, you know the, I'm going to call that maybe the probability of vanishing. So a lot of notation. So this is a Mellon transform that this ME, so what do I have? S, x to the minus s minus 1, ds. So this is, if I do this integral of the moment, I get the probability of, so this is the probability of vanishing. Okay, that I get, this is just from, right now, you know, I'm not using my model because those are the known moments, but of course, I have no idea what it is, but I'm going to say that the probability of vanishing, it's going to be, well, I have a model for that. Okay. So that's the probability that, So what is it I'm saying? I'm going to try to... That's not the probability of vanishing. That's the probability that I, my special value, when I look up to big X, I'm sorry, I have two X, is exactly equal to small X. So the probability of vanishing would be... when. So if you do that, well, my graph may not be exact, but here you know everything. You can compute this integral. You're going to get something like that. And when you want to know the probability that your value is between this and that, you just compute this integral. Okay. It's a normal probability distribution. Normal in the sense of standard, not in the sense Gaussian. Yes, thank you very much. Huh? Thank you. Okay, and if you're saying, well, there's n and there's x, always n is 2 log x. Okay, I never write that, but always n is 2 log x. Well, of course, if you do that, that's a continuous probability. The probability to be 0 is 0. So then you don't have nothing left. But this is not. And this is where at some point we have to use something about our family. So we have to look at some discretization of LE 1 chi. So I told you, well, what is LE 1 chi? Well, that's a complex number. Well, that's not only that. That's not a complex number. You can say much more about that. And following the work of Maser, Tate, and Teitelbaum. So if you want to study that, I'm going to extract something which has arithmetic in it, and then I can look at that. And this thing is not going to be continuous. It's going to jump. It's going to be an integer. So I'm going to define, let me denote it by the algebraic part of this special value. So the algebraic part of this special value, now I'll try to, okay, it is something like that. I think it is exactly like that, okay? So what is that? This is the conductor of the character. This is the period, the real period of the curve. This is the Gauss sum. So this I call the algebraic part, and this is, again, the work of Maser, Tate, and Teitelbaum. You can write it as a sum. So, sorry, A mod F. And here maybe I say chi or associated to E. So the point is this is a cubic character, so those are third root of unity, and those are integer. Those are the so-called modular symbols, so they're integer. No, but here I have the L function of the curve, huh? Yeah, so it's in there, yeah. It does come in the formula. And it, you know, this is the period of the curve, so the curve is there all the place. Okay, and this belongs to, so rho is a third root of unity. So already if I'm using that, it's going to tell you, well, when this thing is not zero, I'm going to look here, if this thing is not zero, it cannot be as small as possible because this is, you know, an integer here, so the smallest one is, can it be arbitrarily small? I could use that, but in fact, there's something much stronger, so what we can say, not much stronger, there's something a bit stronger, I can go down to z. And I'd like to prove that, I'd like at least to prove something, so that's a nice observation from the functional equation. So that LE algebraic 1 chi is in fact an integer. Let me write it like that. So, and also, this doesn't matter because this depends only on the curve. So it's going to be absorbed in the constant. So n chi is an integer, and this is the sign of the functional equation equal to 1, and this is the sign of the functional equation equals to minus 1. So let me take 5 minutes to indicate how this goes. This is just using, I said at the beginning, well, this functional equation does not give you vanishing. Of course, it gives you a strong relation between LE1 chi and LE1 chi bar, and this is what you're using. So if I look at LE algebraic 1 chi, well, I have the formula here. It's going to be, so I have to write it here because it's too far. Then I know if my formula is correct. OK? Okay? But now, of course, I'm going to use the functional equation, which tells you that LE1 chi, well, this is the sign of the functional equation for E, chi of NE. So what do I have? Tau square over F, LE1 chi bar. Okay. So if I plug that in and I don't make any mistake, I'm going to get that this is going to be 2 WE chi of NE. My Gauss sum is still there, divided by the period LE1 chi bar. Okay, provided it's okay. I think we can safely assume that we plug it correctly. Okay, now, of course, I'm just using this relation backward between, you know, the L function and the algebraic part of the L function, and I'm going to get that this is equal to algebraic. So, like that. Okay? But now, what I can look at that, and this thing also holds for the algebraic part. I can conjugate and look what happens. So I have a Gauss sum, but I have cubic characters. So chi of minus 1 is 1, okay, which I use several times. So if I conjugate that, it's the same as conjugating the character. Okay, the same thing holds. So now this algebraic value, well, this is now a fixed root of unity. So this is plus or minus 1. This is 1 row or rho square. So for you just do a case by case, and you're going to see this is okay. Of course, if, for example, if so chi of NE is equal to 1, well, what do you get is that LE algebraic 1 chi is real. It's equal to its complex conjugate, but it's also here. So it's an integer. Okay? And you do all the cases. Sometimes you have a third root of unity, and when the sign of the functional equation is minus, you can get a. Okay, that's what you have. Which gives you that, if you look at that, you'll have that LE, then LE of 1 chi is equal to 0 is the same thing as, of course, this integer being equal to 0, or maybe I can say that it's the same thing as LE 1 chi is smaller, and I don't know if I, okay, so I just have to plug it here now. So LE 1 chi I write in terms of this LE algebraic, which is an integer, which may be a square root of 3. So here notice that you have the Gauss sum and the conductor. So you get a square root of F when you take the absolute value. So a constant depending on E, I can absorb my square root of 3 in that, divided by the square root of F, where F is the conductor of the character. So for it to be 0, you know, there's some discretization. It's not, so now you can, you know, you can look at your probability and you have something which makes sense. And we can then compute and the probability that LE 1 chi is equal to 0, which is equal to the probability that LE 1 chi is smaller than this value. Well, if you integrate your, it's going to be the integral. So now I have to put my PE x, x, d, x. Okay. So that gives you, you just take your probability, and that gives you what is the probability for it to be 0. So this really depends on your family, of course. You know, if you had a different, so if you had other family, here I'm doing that for cubic twist. It's not completely written for the other cases, but what's going to happen is that the things are not going to be integer. They're going to be, in fact, in the maximal real extension of, you know, here you're adding a third root of unity because you have cubic character. So when you're going to get your relation, for if you do it for degree 5 and, you know, characters which are not cubic, but it's going to be degree 5 or the order 5 or order 7, you're going to get different results. And in fact, at some point, this number will get as small as to get the series conversion. You'll get finitely many. Okay, so it's not a, just a slight parenthesis, but let me, you'll see when I make the summation. So this is your probability, and now you have a model for that, and you can compute that. So let me skip a bit of the details, okay, to give you the idea. So I said you have a model for that in which there was, well, this arithmetical factor, and in which there was this moment. But this moment, when you compute the integral, so it was defined as a line integral, when x is small, which is certainly the case here, you compute this integral by moving the line of integration and looking at the poles of your moment. So your moment is made only of gamma function, okay? So you're going to, so, and when x is small, the first pole is going to be the main term, okay? So when you're going to do that, you're going to get that this is equal to a constant which depends on n, which is the same thing that it depends on x, which depends what the conductor of this character. And now, as I'm not doing all the computation, I hope, yes. So what I'm saying here is that if you replace here this thing by what it is, okay, which is the, so you have this arithmetical factor depending on the curve. Well, I'm going to put that in the constant, my constant change. And you have this moment from the random matrix case. Well, you're going to approximate this moment by taking only the first term, which is the one which is dominant when x is small. So maybe I should write, you know, model of some error term. Yes, exactly. Thank you very much. Okay. So I'm just saying here, basically, do the computation, which I'm not going to do. So if you do the, so most of it was done, you know, by, part of it was done by Keating and Snaith. You do this computation and you get that. And then, of course, once you have this probability, well, you have your heuristic model. And this is what I was saying. I should have made my comments now. You just sum this probability, okay, and you see your square root of x. But, of course, if you had a different family, of course, here you would get using exactly the same model. Even if your family had the same symmetry, you would get a different probability. So, for example, if you get that this is not an integer, but this is in a degree 2 over q, this number here would get bigger. For example, if you add 1 over f, well, you would get less vanishing. And if you add, you know, f to the 3f, for example, you would get convergence, so finitely many vanishing. Okay, but I'm doing it for this family, and this is where you get the... So let me just write the conjecture, and let me explain just a bit about the log, and I'll finish there. So the conjecture that you get using that model is then that, okay, summing, and we just sum. So you're going to get that what we're looking at, any of x, it's going to be, well, some constant depending only on x, x to the 1/2. And when I state my conjecture, I'm going to put that here. Okay. So why this log? There are two reasons. For example, here at some point, you're going to take n or x goes to infinity. And this depends on n. It doesn't depend on the container. And it depends on n. And from that, you get a power of a log, which is a quarter. Okay, but why don't I put 1/4? Well, there's something else that I did. I assume that, you know, when I did that, I kind of assume that those n chi will take any integer value. Okay, I'm saying it's an integer. Maybe the integer is, you know, 2f or something like that. Maybe it takes big jumps. And, of course, if it takes big jumps, it's going to change your probability, which is what happens in certain cases. So the exponent that you get, you know, here is, so ee, okay, this is for taking this probability. So I don't know how I can write that. Is that the, this is by taking the probability that LE 1 chi is equal to 0 is equal to the probability that LE 1 chi is smaller than CE divided by square root of x. So this 1/4 just comes from the random matrix theory, from the M. But now, what's going to happen, for example, if you look at if E has rational tree torsion, okay, what seemed to happen, and I say seemed to happen, this is not something that we still cannot prove, you're going to have things like, so this is related to the fact that you have a cubic character in tree torsion. This is the number of prime divisor of F. You're going to have that this thing divides the I'm not going to say the algebraic value, I'm going to say this integer. Okay? So something like that, I mean, I would like to say something like an average, but we still cannot prove it. Something like that seems to happen. I'm really sorry. This was very, very, very strange. Okay. Which means that the probability that this is equal to zero, well, if it's not zero, it cannot, if the conductor has a lot of prime, the next value is not one, because it has a lot of divisibility. So you have to take that into in your account, which is to say that in this case, you would say that the probability of LE1 chi is equal to zero, you could use, it would make, to use here CE, 3 to the mu of f minus 1 divided by square root of f. And if you sum the probability, you'll get an extra log by summing that. Okay? And this is maybe not the end of the story, because the distribution of those numbers, this is a very, very delicate question. You know, if you, of course, we did, one thing you can do is to approach that by, you know, looking at the distribution, making tests. And it seems that there's some tree divisibility. It seems that there's a lot of things which influence that. So there are very subtle things which happens here, okay, which may change slightly the probability. So in this case, maybe that's the last thing I want to say, if you do that, so I'll say it puts an extra log, it's a log square, okay? If you do the sum, you get a log square extra, and it gives you, added to this log to the 1/4, it gives you 9/4. And it seems to be true experimentally, which is to say, well, of course, because this is a, yeah. If this is as true, it makes sense that it influences the vanishing. And I don't have slides with me. I didn't bring them because I was forbidden to bring slides, so I couldn't. So I didn't bring any slides. But if you look on the paper, which is on the web, we make some tests with curve which doesn't have rational tree torsion and curves which have rational tree torsion. And this changes by log square. And really, for curves which have tree torsion, there seem to be more vanishing. Okay? And, I mean, is 9/4 the good answer compared to another exponent of log which is close by? I don't know. But for tree torsion, certainly this looks much more like the good answer than this one. Okay? And for not tree torsion, the 1/4 looks more like the good answer. Okay? That's the end of this talk.